Connected with Ruben Torres. Excited for this episode. We got Jason Redondo, former WWF wrestler. And I'm sitting here with our co-host, Miguel Rodriguez of Millennium Image. I said it right this time.
You know what I'm saying? You did. What's up, guys?
So I'm excited to hear his story. You know, we had a chance to talk before, and I've ran into him at several different events. And, you know, he's gone through a lot of crazy stuff in his life, and he's excited to share his story. He's got some stuff that he dealt with bullying and some abusive relationships in his family coming up, and he's an inspiration, man. So, you know, and then coming, you know, having a chance to work for WWE, and you know, that's kind of cool, man. It's not a lot of people that can share those kind of, you know, stories or opportunities.
Those opportunities,
you know, and that's pretty dope, man. So, you know, I think it's an inspirational story, and you know, I think people need to hear his testimony and where he's at and what God's brought him out of. So a lot of cool stuff, man.
Definitely a great guy all around. Great story, inspiring.
And you know, I want to keep working with Jason and do some stuff. Maybe when we go into the schools and do some of the anti-bullying stuff and all that. Like, he'd be great for that. And as always, Milton Motion is up here producing our stuff, taking photos. Video, producing this show, and doing all our websites and all that crazy stuff. So shout out to Tim Hernandez, always doing it big, helping us out. And you know, and as always, Millennium Images in the house.
Yep, always
doing it. So let's get into this episode with Jason, man. I'm excited for this.
Yeah, I am too.
Let's do this. Let's get connected. Get connected.
If you C-O-N-E-C-T-A-D-O, you already know about the show, so let's go. It's your music and lifestyle, fashion profile, the entertainment source for everything you want to know about. North to the south, the east to the west side, stay connected with Ruben Torres worldwide. So let's go, across the globe, well respected, beasting on the industry. Connected.
Jason, thanks for coming out, man, and hanging out.
No, thank you.
The Connected Podcast. Man, wanted to bring you out today, man, because, you know, I've had an opportunity to talk to you on several occasions, and you got an amazing story, amazing background, and just to know that you're out here in San Diego, and we're like, dude, how come we haven't crossed paths any sooner, you know, and brought you on to hang? So thanks for coming out, man. Appreciate you.
No, thank you for having me. I mean, it's an honor to be here.
Dude, so give us a little bit of your background, and you know, we know you're a former WWE wrestler, but give us a little bit of background and how you kind of came into the game in wrestling.
Oh, well, what's funny, I'll give you a start from when I was a kid. I was the kind of kid who was always looking for a superhero, like Batman or Superman. And
what was your favorite?
My favorite?
Yeah.
Of course, Batman, man. I'm a Batman guy.
Oh, DC, huh?
Oh, DC. Oof. DC all the way. But when I was young, you know, I had I was kind of bullied, and I kind of, you know, it wasn't by a kid or anything like that, but I was bullied by my grandfather, you know, and he was an alcoholic, and he used to cuss me out and, you know, raise his hand to me. And
it was tough.
Yeah, it's tough, you know, especially when you're that small. And I used to pray to God. I said, please send me a hero. And, you know, what I used to get was my brother Mike, who used to protect me. And he would stand up and kind of take the heat off me, and, you know, but then, you know, it was, you know, when you're a kid, you think most grandparents are sweet, but mine wanted to, you know, cuss me out. I mean,
was he one of, like, a military grandpa? Like, he was a veteran, and he had that toughness in him?
He had a military in him, yeah, but, like I said, though, he was an alcoholic. I mean, you know, but I didn't have, like, a normal thing, but, what was weird is, when I was about 8, we lost our home, and I always say homeless, but I wasn't really homeless. But the way I lived down here in National City at night with my one grandparents on the floor, and then I would spend most of my day where I went to school, grew up with at my other grandparents, where my alcoholic grandpa, so I saw him every day, and you know, between him and my other uncles that were also alcoholics. I mean, it's all fighting and stuff, you know, all the time. But But what's weird is, like I said, when I was a kid, I was looking for a hero. And one morning, I was sleeping on the floor at my grandma's house on a black and white TV. I was flipping the channels, and there was Wrestling Man. I fell in love. And I watched his first match was, who was it? Oh, Chino Hernandez teaming up with a guy named Tully Blanchard. And they were the tag champs. But I thought, man, this is kind of cool. They were wrestling two guys in masks. I know they weren't luchadors, but they were wearing masks and stuff. But and then Tully turns on Gino. I go, well, how can he turn on his friend? And this is the very first time I was ever, you know.
Soap opera. Yeah,
yeah, every time, the first time I was ever hooked, you know. And from that day on, I was hooked. I never missed a wrestling show since that day when I was like 9 years old. And what was funny is from that day on, you know, as I got older, I started to hate this. I hated bullies. You know, I always wanted to protect the weak kids. And I mean, there was even times I put it in my testimony where there was a bigger kid who was, you know, 2 years when you're in school, it's a big age difference, you know. But I saw an older kid picking on one of the other kids, and I ran up to this bully and I picked him up and I slammed him, and in Hulk Hogan voice I said, "That's what you get, brother." And then I took off and I ran. And then another story similar to that. This kid was even bigger, and he was picking on another kid, and I went in for the slam again, and I couldn't lift this guy, so I gave him the biggest Ric Flair chop and smack, and I did the woo, and he looked at me, and I took off running, but I was protecting that kid, and you know, and I felt, you know, like I said, I hate bullies, man, and to this day, I kind of flip out when it comes to a bully, you know. And
so, you know, most people, they think, you know, that... You know, man, well, you know, you picked on the bully.
Right.
You know, you went and bullied the bully.
Yeah.
But is it something that you just seen? Is it something within that wrestling culture where you were just like, dude, you know, some of these guys are good guys, some of these guys are bad guys, and I want to choose to be the, like, use your power for good?
Well, I've been the bad guy a few times. I'm not going to lie. I probably said some things that I wouldn't.
Well, we're doing photos earlier, and we're like, dude, how tall are you? Because you're a tall dude. You're a big dude. You always been that size, even back in school when you're picking on the bullies?
Man, when I was in school, I was skinny. And I just started, you know, my senior year, I started lifting weights. And, you know, but it's kind of, I helped, you know, I was kind of thin because back in the end of 87, I grew up a healthy kid, and I always thought there was nothing different from me. But when I was trying out for baseball in high school, they found that I had a hole in one of the valves of my heart.
Ooh.
And I needed heart surgery right away. And I said, well, I'm healthy. What do I need to, I know I don't want to be different, but it turned out they told me if I didn't have heart surgery right away, if I waited too long, I'd need a new valve. If I waited even too longer, I might need a heart transplant. And then they said if I waited too long, I wouldn't make it to my 30th birthday. So the winter of 87, Christmas break, I had open heart surgery. And
how old were you?
I was a sophomore in high school, so I had been about 15. It was before I turned 16.
Wow.
And man, when I was in hospital, though, I was, you know, you wake up scared and, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, I was in actually a room to where I didn't have cable. And the doctor saw I was kind of sad. And I go, hey, he goes, what's the matter? I go, I'm missing all my wrestling shows. That's how obsessed I was with wrestling. And he said, move him to a room right away. And they moved me to a room and I got to watch wrestling. He sat bedside with me and we watched wrestling, and it was there.
That's funny.
I watched this guy do all these moves, and I told God, I said, hey, and I had tubes, you know, everywhere you could think of, nose, whatever. I had tubes coming out of my body and open, you know, wound on my chest. And I told him, I said, hey, God, I'm going to be a professional wrestler. And, you know, it was there after watching this guy, you know, that's like, you know, I almost challenged God, and I told him I was going to be a pro wrestler.
It's most funny. It's funny because most people at that time, they'd be like, all right, I'm done doing anything like too crazy. And you're sitting there in a hospital bed thinking, dude, I'm going to turn this around and I'm going to take it to another level.
Right.
So was it at that point where you're like, dude, I'm gonna seek how to do this on a professional level, or what was your next step?
Well, after I graduated high school, a couple of years later, I started training in 1990. I thought, oh, here we go. I'm making my millions.
Where'd you train at?
I trained in San Bernardino have you ever heard Jesse Hernandez?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Jesse trained me.
Was it EWF or something like that?
Back when I started, though, it was, I think it was Western States Wrestling Association. It was in an old building called the San Bernardino Arena. That building was like in a movie called Body Slam. It's the same. They make it look like they're different places, but it was the same building. Excuse me. And, I thought I was going to make millions, but, man, just to start training, I drove from San Diego to San Bernardino 2-3 times a week in the back of my buddy's truck, and it was just a blanket on me. It rained, it was hot, it hailed, and but the first few years were, not tough, but you paid your dues. I mean, I started in this promotion called Bay Area Wrestling, and there was Chris Jericho was there.
Oh, nice.
I tell people I started with Chris Jericho. He had started a little bit before me, but he was there. And what's funny, I always tell people this story. My son hates when I tell this story because it sounds funny, but do you remember, I kind of, got into it. I don't want to sound like some tough guy, but, you got to protect yourself. And I got into it with some tough guys. And and I got my only black eye from Bay Area Wrestling. And the only black eye in my life after being in, getting brawls and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you'll never guess who it was. And
Chris Jericho.
Nope. Do you remember Mae Young?
Oh, yeah.
Mae Young gave me a black eye.
She recently passed away, right?
She did, yeah.
So you got into it. How old was she at the time? Because she's super old. She's ancient.
Yeah, I was
so she was probably like a grandma already back then.
Oh, yeah, she was probably like 65 back then. Yeah. I was wrestling a guy named the Spanish Hitman, where she was his manager.
So you wrestled her?
No. I wrestled a Spanish Hitman.
So she just popped in
the eye? She was the manager of him, and he held my arms, and she popped me in the eye. Pretty good. It's a funny story, but...
Were you able to hit her back or anything? How did that happen?
I got the grabber, and she got the fall, back then, but it was funny, It's just Mae Young, but she was like the sweetest, lady, I just remember her. I'd always have to ride in the car with her, and she'd always have, she was a crazy old lady. She would cut off. We'd get off the airplane, and it was like, all right, who's going in what car? And for some reason, I got stuck with May, and
he's all covering himself.
Oh my gosh, she would.
She's WWE Hall of Fame.
Oh yeah, she would cut these gas trucks off and run red lights and cut people off and flip them off. And I had a buddy of mine.
Just a tough broad, huh?
Yeah, I had a buddy of mine who was his name was James, big Samoan guy, 300-something pounds. Him and I were in the back of the car screaming. I hope my language isn't bad, but she was like, "Shut up, you pussies."
That's a tough. Dude,
you got a black eye by Mae Young. I got choked out by Gazi Parman. She's like a world class. Brazilian jiu-jitsu instructor,
right?
And she's been on the cover of like all these different like martial arts magazines, and so she's a big deal. And we were at San Diego Combat Academy,
right,
with my boy Manolo, and she was over there, she was teaching classes or whatever, and they were all talking about how they were putting people to sleep, like choking them out, like the air, and they're talking about the different kinds of chokes, like, oh, this is an air choke and this is a different kind of choke. And she was like, "Well, I'm gonna put you to sleep. I'm gonna choke." And I was like, "No, you're not." And somehow she talked me into it. I don't know what it was at the time. I was like, "All right." But all these other guys were choking out like my boys that were there. And then I was like, "All right, well, I guess only if it's you. Like, I don't want these other dudes." So yeah, she got behind me and choked me out, put me to sleep, and did the whole thing. And I think they slapped my stomach or something to wake me up. But yeah, you got punched by a grandma, and I got choked out by a Brazilian jiu-jitsu female specialist or whatever. But, just funny little female stories.
Yeah.
But go on.
Oh, no. And get back to where I was talking about, like the first few years, I thought, oh, man, I'm going to make millions. And, man, there was nights where we would drive, 5-6 hours, and there'd only be like 5-6 people we wrestled in front of. Or I remember doing shows with the Chris Jericho, man, where we got paid in hot dogs and nachos. I mean, that was our payday. And then, you know, I would always, in back of my head, I was like, I mean, this sounds weird, but I always questioned God. I said, man, am I doing the right thing? And so in 1993, I still questioned him. And I said, am I doing the right thing? Is this where you want me to go? And I got to do WWE in 1993. And
Take it back to independent wrestling real quick. Because, you know, we were talking about that not too long ago. Independent wrestlers, there isn't a lot of money to be made. It's not like very solid independent wrestling until you have like a bigger long-term contract.
Bigger name, right? It's all the dreamers, man. It's like, it's
where I mean, you don't have to put anybody on blast, but how much do they make, do you think? Just a couple $100, $50, hot dogs and nachos.
Hot dogs and nachos.
I got hot dogs and nachos. Yeah. I was happy with it. Yeah. If I got a soda with it, I was like happy. But it just depends, you know.
But it took a couple of years, huh?
Oh,
so
yeah.
You were in this for about 2-3 years already until you actually started to see a paycheck or something. Or at least something that was worth your time and worth all the effort you've been putting into this.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it took a few years. I mean, like I said, my first match was in 91. And, you know, I questioned what I was doing. But in 93, I got to do WWE. And I was pretty blessed. You know, I got to work with some of the top guys.
But before we get into WWE, there's a Richie Jimenez is asking, any truth, Jason, that you were secretly conquistador number 2 of the tag team Los Conquistadores?
Oh, no, I would have loved to have been, though.
Is that the guys you wrestled or that you've seen wrestled with the masks that weren't
They all wore gold. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So there you go, Richie. Thanks for the question.
Right.
So, okay. Oh, wait. Tim had a question.
Yeah, I have
a question.
So, I like in most action sports, because I'm not saying wrestling's action sports, but action sports athletes, right? When you go into it, you know, I know early on in the growing of or the beginning of action sports, there wasn't a lot of money, just like wrestling, right? So as an athlete going into it, you know, in something like BMXing or whatever, there's no insurance, there's no retirement plan. So how do you? I mean, when you decided to go into wrestling, were you like, okay, how am I gonna? If I get hurt, how do I sustain myself? Is that something you thought about, or are you just thinking about wrestling?
I was just thinking about wrestling. Be honest with you, I didn't care. I was like, what's insurance?
Really?
Yeah. There was nights where, when I first started, man, there was one where I did like a splash off the top, and it felt like my kneecap went up here, and this was like beginning of the match, and I just pushed that right back down, and and just kept going, And today, my wife worries about injuries and stuff, but back then I didn't care. You want me to go to fall to the concrete? I'm gonna fall to concrete.
Oh, so have you ever wrestled somebody and going into the match knowing that person's injured? And do you usually go light on them?
That's a good question.
Well, if somebody tells me, hey, to be honest, if somebody said, hey, my neck's kind of messed up, and I'm not going to be giving them DDTs and all of the stuff, maybe
pile drivers.
Yeah, yeah. I'll work on a leg or something like that just to kind of get away from it. I don't want to hurt.
Kill them. Yeah.
I mean, we're always like, you almost look like as a dance partner. I mean, that's how I look at it. I mean, I look at it. Well, I don't know if that's the way
extreme
I want to
put dancing.
It. Yeah, exactly. But you want to.
It is like dancing.
I mean,
I'm not. I don't want to take anything away from. Like, I don't know what I can say. I mean, can I say anything about boxing or about wrestling?
No, you can't.
Yeah, whatever you want.
Oh, okay, because like I shot in TJ for the crash, and that was one of the things that fascinated me. Being behind the scenes is, you see the wrestlers before the matches together, and then you see them, two guys are going to go out and battle each other.
Oh, yeah. So now you're letting all the secrets over here.
They would mad dog each other.
No, go ahead. You can say it.
No, but they weren't trying to coordinate, but they were just like, this is what we're going to do.
It's not choreographed, but it's coordinated.
Yeah, it's coordinated. That's what coordination.
It's just not choreographed. It's not like they're out there practicing.
Well, it's a beautiful mess. It turns into a beautiful, crazy.
Yeah, organized chaos, basically. Yeah.
We have a question, though, for Facebook.
They call it calling spots. They call their spots.
I feel bad now.
That's the terminology.
Yeah.
No,
I'll cut that out.
It's all good. It's all good. It's part of it because most of the people don't know what goes on behind the scenes, behind the curtain. And I think that's the beauty of it, that we can have conversations like this and you know, the mystery was taken away, I think, a long time ago with wrestling and the characters. And, you know, before it was kayfabe where everybody needed to stay in character and all that stuff. Dude, now they got cameras all over backstage and you could see. And then even if you're actually at a WWE show, you see like the two guys that just wrestled, the good guy and the bad guy, driving off together.
Driving off together.
And dude, so there's no mystery about it anymore.
And growing up, man, I didn't. My cousins used to watch wrestling all the time. Like, that's how I know the Macho Man and all those guys, right? But I used to always go like, okay, that's fake. We knew it was fake, right? Well, we would say it's fake. But I used to always wonder, like, so are these guys scripted? Like, for everything they say, like when they go in front of the camera with what's that, Mean Gene?
Oh, yeah. Gene Okerlund.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, do they have a script? Do they script you guys, or is it just like you go in there and you act?
A lot of times when I just spoke what was off the top of my head, you know. But I heard nowadays, you know, not so much. I don't think the bigger stars have they're kind of free roam.
Yeah.
But I think that like the lesser name guys, they pretty much have to follow.
Follow a script. Yeah. So that's kind of like part of your value as an athlete then in wrestling,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you can sell yourself and you're a great actor and you're in there and you promote heavily, yeah. Then you're
there's
golden, right?
There's actual writers now too, that part of the creativity process with WWE, you know, the creative team with WWE, where they'll actually give you like, oh, this is the storyline that we're going to be working on, so here, say this. And there's some guys that are like, no, I'm not saying what you're telling me. I'm going to do what I want to, you know. But you have to be like John Cena, kind of. You have to be big. I know who was it? CM Punk. They would always tell him to. He's like, no, you know. And he would come out and just tell the truth about like the business and about, you know, everything. He was up on
it. Because like Lucha Underground for me, that's one thing that sold me on it. Like the part when there's like the bad guy, the Don, and then they come into his office. To me, that was like, whoa, this is cool. This is almost like. Like you said, like Sopranos and wrestling, right? Yeah. And then in action.
Yeah.
So for me, that was a really big sale.
Yeah, there was a wrestler, rest in peace his career, Enzo Amore.
Yeah.
He got signed just off of his mic skills. Like, he was just dope on the mic. And his in-ring skills weren't that great at all.
But how was your mic skills?
I thought they were pretty good. When I first started, I couldn't do it. what happened is I was this, you know, baby face guy, and I couldn't cut a promo of it in my life, depending. But I turned heel, and it's easier to get people to hate you.
Heel means what?
Heel means the bad guy.
You know? Oh, the bad guy.
Yeah. So it's easier to get people to hate you than to, you know, to get them to cheer for you. But to answer your first question about the injuries and stuff, looking up, man, everybody, you would think we're all like fathers and, you know, husbands and stuff like that. You want somebody. If you're a wrestling guy, you protect their life, and you're hoping they would protect your life because, hey, yeah. I mean, guys have broken their necks. Guys have been, I mean, you know, you hope somebody, you know, you're as good as your dance partner, you know, is. But there's a funny story. I was doing a thing in Arizona with Bob Saget. It was like a documentary for A&E. And we were sitting there. We were all competing to wrestle the guy from the champion from Japan from Dragon Gate. And they said, oh, you guys, you know, you're going to be competing to wrestle one of the top guys who he's a known mixed martial artist and stuff like that. And, I mean, you might win this competition, but you could lose because he's so dangerous. I thought, man, I looked, I got, and Bob Saget goes, are you guys scared? You know, and I looked and I said, you know, Bob, you know, if I'm a single, at the time I was a single dad, I said, I'm a single dad, if somebody tries to purposely hurt me to where I can't feed my son, and I don't curse, so, but I did at that time. I said, Bob, if somebody tries to hurt me where I can't feed my son, I'll effing kill him. I won't use the, you know, but he looked at everybody and goes, does anybody else need to change their pants?
Nice. Yeah. Going back to the being the bad guy, could you show us your mic skills? Like, act like I'm a wrestler. Come on, give me a taste. Give us a taste of that.
Oh man, it's kind of how you put me on the spot.
Imagine he's about to hurt you purposely, and you can't feed your son.
Yeah, I'm the guy that took your lady in the ring, your ring girl, whatever.
Valet.
Yeah.
Oh man, I don't know if I could do that.
That's like asking a rapper to freestyle.
Yeah.
Come on. Rappers don't like to freestyle.
Let me think of one later. Maybe if I can come up.
Get him pumped up.
Yeah, we're gonna have to get him to do a drop like.
Yeah, we gotta get a job. Yeah,
I'm gonna lay this smack down.
But Jason, we have a question here for Mr. Mark Young. Well, first he says he's you seem like a very motivated person, and he respects that of you. what his question is what is your biggest adversity you had to overcome in life?
Oh, it's going to, well, obviously, like I said, when I had open heart surgery and, you know, I always kind of hid that, my scar, because I always thought, you know, it'd be, you know, in a sport, it kind of looks and everything, you know, but, I got an answer to that question. I was kind of getting to it. When I got to do WWE, I got to wrestle like Bam Bam Bigelow, Razor Ramon, who was, you know, Yokozuna, and
Razor Ramon, dude.
Yes. Yeah, to where one day I was going to Arizona, April 1st, 93. I questioned God. I said, hey, am I doing the right thing? I mean, this doesn't feel right. So I get there and I see Razor Ramon. He's standing with one of the agents and he's pointing at me. And I'm thinking, oh man, I'm in trouble. Because, you know, it's really a nobody then. And the agent walks over to me. His name is Rene Goulet. And he goes, hey, do you want to wrestle Shawn Michaels? Well, that wrestler that I told you guys I watched in the hospital that made me want to be a wrestler was Shawn Michaels. All that time I questioned God, I believe that was his answer. I was doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. Because that day I told God I was going to be a pro wrestler in the hospital. I wanted to be like Shawn. And all that time I questioned him if I was doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. I got to wrestle Shawn that night for an Intercontinental title.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah.
That's great. And you also wrestled, you know, Blue Demon, which is big on our end, the Mexican side of stuff. Yeah. Tell us about that, because that, I mean, that's two legendary wrestlers that you were able to share the ring with. Fill me in on how that felt.
It was kind of cool because I went to the NWA tapings in Hollywood, and I didn't know. I was like, man, this is my first time wrestling for the NWA, and I thought, man, they didn't even know who I am, and, you know, it's like, am I, you know, I don't say a question, but I think, for me, I always think, does anybody know who I am? I mean, who does anybody even care that I'm here? And I get back in the back, and they have the list of all the matches coming up, and the main event was me against the Blue Demon. I was like, oh my God, I'm wrestling the Blue Demon, and, you know, and they had drinks. I think it was called Fuel Throttle or whatever.
Yeah.
And
had his face on it.
It had the Blue Demon face on it. And it was the Blue Demon face. Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, this is big time, you know? Yeah. And I couldn't wait to tell my son, you know? Yeah, and
that was dope.
Yeah, so that was my thing. And, you know, all this time, you know, you could go anywhere down here south from San Diego and you'll see at least once a day something Blue Demon.
Yeah.
And I got...
Or you come to our office and you see...
Yeah, Blue I see Demon it all over the wall.
Blue Demon all over.
Wrestling Blue Demon, I mean, could you tell the difference between the lower level wrestlers, obviously the like amateur, but pro entry level wrestlers against Blue Demon. Could you tell the difference in his moves and
how he
executed stuff?
I mean, to me, because Lucha is a little bit different than American. I mean, it's kind of Lucha over the years, it's kind of adapted a little bit more of the American style, but I could still, you know, see it in him that, you know, that the Lucha was still there. And like I said, it was, I'm not going to lie, man. I was a little awe, you know, because, I mean, it was a Blue Demon. I was in there, and, you know.
He was a bit more of a grappler, too, more brawler than,
right.
You know, he wasn't really aerial as much. But, you know, like how you're saying, you know, it's like having a dance partner. You know, even going back and, like, watching Rey Mysterio stuff, it's like some of the greatest matches that Rey Mysterio had was with people that were, like, a good base for him, you know. Having wrestled so much with like Eddie Guerrero and Psychosis and all these guys already knew the moves and how to base for him and how to make him look good. And so, yeah, you're pretty much only as good as like that guy that you're wrestling is allowing you to look, I guess, right?
I mean, you're bringing Ray, but look who he's with all the time, but Eddie Guerrero or, you know what I mean? Oh, man, they made...
Yeah,
I mean,
legends.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so just before we go into all the WWE stuff, what is a good way right now for people to get into wrestling? I mean, I know you work with SoCal Pro, and they have a wrestling school. What advice would you give somebody right now to get into wrestling?
Advice? You know, I'm the kind of person who, you know, I used to always wonder, you know, do I tell people to get into wrestling? Because it's a lot of wear and tear on your body. But now I think about it, man, if somebody has a dream, chase it, you know. And nowadays, when I first started, like I said, I had to drive San Bernardino. There's not schools you know, all over the place. Now there's schools, like, there's, for me, living, it's born and raised in San Diego, there's one, you know, there's the SoCal Pro School you were talking about, and there used to be a couple other ones. I don't know if they still exist, but, you know, there's schools all over the place now. But, you know, like I said, if you can get hooked up with a good school and a good trainer and, you know, don't be afraid to chase the dream, man. It's like, you know, like I said, at first, when I first started wrestling, do I want to tell somebody to do it? But now I said, who am I to tell someone not to chase their dream, you know? And
how does someone get noticed by WWE, or how did you even get signed? How did you get to that level from going independent to, you know, you're wrestling in high schools and, like, you know, little boys and girls clubs to going to the big league? How'd you manage that?
Well, I was pretty blessed. I was one of the people that helped train me was a guy named Louis Spicoli. He was in WWE, and Jesse and Bill, they got us, you know, hooked up, and we got to do some matches with them, and Billy Anderson, that's what I meant to say, and Jesse Hernandez, and, you know, we were fortunate, we got a little bit more exposure because they knew people, you know, they did matches with, they were referees and ring announcers and stuff, to where they got us in the door. So,
well, you know, it's not that easy now. Like, now they have the whole process of, like, you got to go through the performance center, and you got to do, like, it's probably a little easier back then. And now it's like, dude, you got to go through all the, you know, you got to learn how to fall. You got to learn how to speak on the mic. You got to learn how to cut a promo, you know, in the camera. And, like, you got to do all kinds of stuff before they even send you up to the big leagues, you know, which is probably a good thing. Like, you know, but, you know, you see all the raw talent that was back then, you know, because even, like, watching Chris Jericho back in the day, like, you know, when he was WCW, you can tell, like, his mic skills weren't all that, and, like, he grew into that, you know. So is there any of these schools that teach you all the behind-the-scenes stuff, or is it just, we're going to teach you how to get in the ring and you're off on your own?
Well, I know at the SoCal Pro School they have I've seen it. I've never seen them actually use it, but they had the green screen, and I think they practice their promos there. And I'm pretty sure a lot of the places, too, that you know, they should. A good school would teach you how to do a promo. I'd hope so. But, you know, it was just one of those things. For me, I would watch tapes of, like, just guys talking and, you know, whatever they would say, to little things that, you know, I'd try to pick up on. You're not going to, you know, we all, in wrestling, we all kind of steal a little bit from here and add it to this to, you know, you kind of have to.
Even, like, everybody gives The Rock credit for the word jabroni, because, you know, he made it popular,
right?
You know, but even,
what was it?
Jabroni.
Yeah. I've heard that a couple times.
And he took it from the Iron Sheik.
Yeah. You know. Well, that word's probably been around before even.
Yeah.
I mean, that word probably, like, at least I don't even know how many years before even The Rock was probably in. You know.
So, but what would you say, like, equalness in terms of, like, wrestling and mic skills, right? Where's the balance there? Do you think you got to be a big talker and also show up on what you say, or you can be a big talker and, you know, maybe it didn't work out the way you said, but you're entertaining people at the same time, so it really doesn't matter?
Well, I've seen guys who had no wrestling skill at all, but can talk the biggest talk, main event, and sell out arenas, you know. And then you've seen guys with could do every move in the book, but can't speak on the mic, who can't draw flies.
That crowd.
Well, Enzo Amore is a good. He's a good example of that, because his in-ring skills weren't all that. I think his first pay-per-view or second pay-per-view or whatever it was, he, like, knocked himself out in the ring. Like, he hit one of the ropes and he was, like, got a concussion. You know, but even, like, Hulk Hogan wasn't that great of a wrestler.
Yeah.
But he was a great character and, you know, his mic skills.
Did you just say he knocked himself out?
He knocked himself out.
Sounds like McGregor, Conor McGregor.
Oh, well, here we go. Soon to be WWE, Conor McGregor. And I know somebody else was asking about your workout regimen. I think it was Eric.
Raw eggs, right?
Well, you said drink eggs like Rocky?
Raw eggs.
What's a workout regimen? I mean, again, for someone that wants to come into the wrestling business, stuff that you've seen, like, how do you treat yourself? Obviously, you can't eat like the stuff that I eat every day. How do you...
Oh, man.
Manage to, like,
you know what?
I mean, because being on the road and doing, you know, I was on the road just a little bit with WCW, and, dude, these guys, they wake up, they got to find a gym, they got to find a tanning booth, all kinds.
Tanning booth.
For real.
It's a job to be you have to have I don't want to say it's a job to get ready for a match, but it almost is. Like, you said, go to the gym and even tanning. And but, you know, I'm not going to lie here on the microphone, but I never really watched my diet, man. I ate at Denny's almost 3-4 times a week. I mean, I used to be able to drive up California and Arizona. I was like, I've eaten at that Denny's. And, you know.
Stop at every In-N-Out.
It wasn't the salads I was eating there.
Okay, but that's not for everybody.
Yeah. Work out and eat, right. Yeah.
But it's because you were doing so much, though. That's why. You're so active, wrestling. That takes a lot of energy. And, you know.
So your prayers and eat your vibe.
You're calling your moves like, this one on this guy is going to be moons over Miami.
My slammy.
Moons over my slammy.
Yeah, but that was the only thing that was open late at night, you know, at Denny's, you know, when you're driving.
Or Shoney's, as you get out east. They call it something else.
Shoney's?
Yeah, it's called something.
That's the Denny's Carl's of the
Jr.
East.
Carl's Jr. is called something else as you get out there too, right?
Right. But like I said, but the training, I'd go when I first started, you know, I never missed a day. You know, if I wasn't lifting weights, I was doing cardio one day. I'm going to say I've been slacking, but since now my son is 16, my son Jacob's 16 now, he's into weightlifting, and he's kind of motivated me to start lifting again because...
He's going to start beating you up, huh?
Well, he's going around the house flexing in front of me while I'm trying to watch TV saying, Dad, check this out.
So is he aspiring to be a wrestler?
He says that's plan B, but, you know, he's playing baseball at Kearney High School and here in San Diego, and, you know, he's 16, he throws about 91, and, you know, hopefully... If it gets him to the next level of college, you know, I kind of, you know.
What would you say to your son if he wanted to maybe become, you know, go down that career path of becoming a wrestler? I know you were just saying follow your dream, but this is your son. You know, you want to protect him and you want to, would you say?
I would just try to make sure he got the right way. And to this day, you know, even when he gets about 9 or 10, I would help make, you know, when I do shows, I'd make him go break down the ring and carry the stuff back. Nice. You know, pay a little dues, you know. I didn't want him to be, you know, if he ever did go in that, you know, he could say he did that. You know, he wasn't handed, like, I'm not going to say any names, but some guys have been handed stuff to where, you know, I think that's why a lot of fans don't respect certain guys because, you know, they've been handed stuff, you know. And my son knows what it's like, you know. I make him pick up the chair, fold up the chairs, and you know, I make them do all that stuff. So
I was listening to an interview with Shane McMahon, and he was saying how he started. You know, I mean, he's the son of the owner of WWF back then, but even how he started, like, his dad didn't just give him the keys to the car and say, "Dude, do it." It was like, "Nah, like here's a broom, go clean that up. Here, go help these guys build the ring. Go help these guys tear down the ring." You know what I'm saying? And how he started. Like, you know, from the bottom, like he wasn't handed anything.
Right.
And so, you know, I think that's dope when they can learn all aspects of it. I had the chance to talk to Famous B.
Yeah.
And Famous B, he was saying how he's done it all. He's like, "Dude, I'll set up the ring." He's like, "Now I know how to set up the ring. Dude, I'll do commentating. Now he knows how to," you know what I'm saying? Like, interview backstage and do. So he wants to learn all aspects of wrestling and not just, you know, how to do stuff in the ring. But, you know, I think that's bold of someone to take that next level. And, you know, like how you're saying, like with your son, like, "Nah, dude, go help out with this." And if now you know all of it and you feel like you weren't handed, you know, you weren't spoon fed the whole, you know, the whole thing. It's more like, "Dude, I learned how to do it from, you know, A to Z, you know?" So yeah, that's cool that you did that, man.
Even when I first started, I think it was right before my first match, I got to speak with the late, great Owen Hart.
Ooh.
And he was telling us, "Do whatever you got to do." He goes, "Brett used to referee matches." He was telling us about his older brother, Bret Hart. Referee matches, he set up the ring. You know, he did everything from, you know, ground zero. And look, he became one of the greatest of all time. You know, and, you know, he probably respected for that.
Best there ever will be. Mm-hmm. Yep. Someone else was talking too. They asked Richie. He was asking, "Any wrestlers you had any real beef with in the ring?"
I can't really think of, you know, anybody. I mean, I'd like to think I'm pretty likable, I guess.
You never, you know, some people.
Yeah, I mean, there's some. I don't mean to interrupt, but there's some guys, you know, that try to act a little, you know, hit you a little stiffer, and you just got to give it right back. And it's called a receipt in our business. And if somebody tries to put you in there, you just give right back, and that's how you earn the respect. You know, if it's the guys that take it, is the ones that don't earn the respect. I you know, I just give right back.
So that means there's real beef between the fighters, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so some of these fighters, they really don't like each other. So all that smack talking, that's real. That's coming from how they feel about some of these guys.
Yeah, some of it.
Sometimes,
Oh, wow.
I mean, a lot of people don't realize. When I first started, it was when I would go to a different territory, you know, people would think, oh, who's this young guy, you know? And, you know, they'd try to act a little rough with me, and... Hey man, I just give right back, you know. Yeah.
So let's take it to WWE. You make it to this level in WWE, and you get noticed. You get called up to the big leagues. Now you have Razor Ramon, you know, Scott Hall. That's like that kid, and you get asked to wrestle Shawn Michaels. I know you were telling me before, and in your testimony, you're sharing that. Kind of one of the things that in your mind that you would think would hold you back or whatever was your scar. Let's talk about your scar.
Well, like I said, I had open heart surgery, and I know it's not like the biggest thing in the world, but when you're a kid growing up, you know,
self-conscious about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Self-conscious about it. And after that match, getting back to Scott Hall, he was the first one to greet me with the biggest hug. And I thought, oh my God, this is Scott Hall, Razor Ramon at the time, and gave me a big hug. And he was
Yeah.
He told everybody, he said, hey, I told everybody you were going to have a great match with Sean, and he hooked it up. And the next day, I guess Mr. McMahon sent one of the agents down named Tony Gurria, and he goes, hey, I had this, like my mom made this singlet that I wore that covered my scar. And none of my trainers knew, none of my buddies knew that I had heart surgery because I hit it. And
was that something you wanted to hide? You didn't want people to look at you differently?
Exactly. Okay. And I don't want to say a sign of weakness, but you know, I thought people might treat me different. And I was explaining, like in a sport where it's in a business where looks and everything, it's for some reason I thought it was going to hurt my chances of ever. And the next day, Mr. McMahon sent one of the agents, Tony Gurria, down, and he said, hey, they want to see you wear these. It was a regular shorts type wrestling thing. And like I said, I hadn't told anybody. And this is one of the things I regret in my whole wrestling career. I pretended I was hurt and I couldn't wrestle. And from there, you know, I'm thinking that was one of my chances. Maybe they wanted to see what my build would look like, you know, or how I looked, and I pretended I was hurt and I didn't wrestle for them, you know.
That's your way out.
Yeah. It was they say the enemy gets in your head, and I think got in my head, and, you know, I didn't take that chance on that one, and I kind of blew that opportunity, you know.
So in hindsight, anybody that's going through anything or has gone through something similar, what advice would you give someone that has, whether it's a scar or just has battled with anything, like you're saying, bullying or anything else, what advice or what, or maybe even there's a scripture, maybe there's something that you learned from that moment to where, man, I regret backing down from that, or I should have ran after my dreams, or I should have, what would you have to say about that?
You know, I don't know how to put that because everything to me revolves around my son and my wife and everything. And maybe, I don't want to tell anybody not to chase their, you know, because of a scar or anything like that. But sometimes I look back and I have peace because I look and I think, man, what about if they did like something? Well, I never would have met, maybe I would never have met my ex-wife, which gave me my son. Mm-hmm. Or I wouldn't have met my current wife. You know, I think things happen for a reason. Maybe that wasn't my time at that time that I did that. I mean, I could always say, oh, I could have been a bigger name maybe back in the day if I would have just did that. But, you know, I have no regrets. I mean, like I said, you know, son and wife. And, you know, it's all, you know, maybe it wasn't my time at that time.
No, you know, you got like a... what's his name? Joaquin Phoenix, who's got the cleft lip, right? He's got kind of like the, you know, and you just think like, well, what if he was so self-conscious that he wouldn't have went on to make these great movies that, that he did, you know? Right. And
Hold on for a second. The only reason he made great movies is because his brother died.
All right. But he's a good actor.
He's good, but he wouldn't have been nowhere.
Yeah, okay. But imagine if he would have allowed the cleft lip to hold him back.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. And that's what I was getting at is like sometimes we have, you know, and I haven't really talked about it much, and especially, you know, it's something that I never really, you know, put out there. But, you know, as a kid, I struggled with dyslexia or whatever. And, you know, I still kind of, you know, see numbers weird every now and then. But, you know, it's just you think about like, dude, what if we let some of those things hold us back? But now you have that and you share that as your testimony. Now, is there, do you also have a part in your life where you were like, hey, you know, you went back to Mr. McMahon and he didn't know that about you, but you were able to go back and share that. I think you wrote a letter, you called him.
Oh, no. You know what? You know, one of the days I was just kind of sitting there and I just, you know, I kind of had it with the business part of wrestling, but I still always loved wrestling. And then one day I just decided to write a letter just to show that I existed. Yeah. And it sat on my...
Because he never knew about the scar.
Never, okay. No. And I just told him about my scar and my surgery and stuff. And, you know, I said, I'm just write this letter. And I wrote it hand, and it sat on my desk for like at least a couple months.
I was about to say, I'm sure it was pretty hard to write that letter.
Yeah. So my wife typed it up for my birthday 1 year, a couple months later, and she said, send it. I thought, this is silly. No way they're going to get this. They get millions of letters. So I remember around the date, but it was like 2005, I went to go see Batman Returns. You know, Batman. I just told you I'm a big Batman geek. And I turned my phone off. During the movie, they called me, and they said, Mr. McMahon loves your story. And they want to do something with it. So I was all excited. I called everybody and I called them back. And of course, it took like a couple months for me to get, you know, connected with the, it was John Laurinaitis, the vice president at the time. And, you know, it's just one of those things. He told me they believed in opportunity and stuff. But at that time, you know, I was going through a rough part of my wrestling and, you know, we all kind of, when I first married, you know, you don't see a lot of times, there's a lot of ups and downs in wrestling. And, you know, your whole family and friends, they see you at a high sometimes, but then they also see you when you're at a low sometimes, like a roller coaster ride. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to throw her on the bus, but I had the person who's supposed to love you for better or for worse. Mm-hmm. telling me I was chasing a dream that was never going to happen. And I had to stick up for her on this part because she took that roller coaster ride and, you know, with me, the ups and downs, and it was hard. But anyways, back to when they said Mr. McMahon loved the story and they finally got a hold of me, they said, hey, John Laurinaitis said he believes in opportunity. The first part of the conversation was he told me that I really don't know who you are, and you know, I don't, you know, and I was like, why did he even bother calling me? He goes, but I believe in opportunity.
But going by the name Brian West back then, or
yes, but I wrestled under my own name. Just for those ones, they didn't want to kill my name off, so they call me Brian West. And but they said they believe in opportunity. I was so excited. I was telling all my friends. They said to give me an opportunity, but then at the time I was a single dad. I looked at my son Jacob, and I go, I don't want to take him on that roller coaster ride. And I never pursued it after that. And that was probably another one of those.
So you had two WWE opportunities.
Two.
Wow.
Yeah, two.
That's two more than more people would ever have.
More than anyone will ever have.
Yeah. But then, like I said, you know, at the time, you know, I think I had opportunities that more people have, but the main, I look at main thing, my son and my wife, and I can't ever, you know, God's blessed me with them. What about if I went, you know, wrestled the first time? I would have never had my son What about if I took that opportunity? I would never have married my wife, you know? So I have no regrets, you know, even though I had two opportunities.
Wow. That's,
I would like a third, though.
Now my life, yeah.
Well, you know, even if, you know, you kind of go back on it and like, hey, man, you know, you want to kind of revisit my story and see what you can do? Because it doesn't even have to be like an in-ring thing. It could be like, do something creative backstage, or like we were talking about earlier, Jason is giving his life to the Lord and you know, you're walking with the Lord. And we're, you know, I know we've mentioned it at the toy drive event a few months ago, or like last month or whatever. You know, like how Sonny from POD is doing the backstage gospel thing. He wants to do like a chaplain for the music industry. And we're talking about it. We're like, dude, what if there's an opportunity to be like a chaplain in WWE or in the wrestling industry?
It'd be good.
You know, something like that to help keep, you know, some of the kids or some of the people that are riding the fence about where they're at. Just to kind of whip some of these guys into shape. Is that something that you would maybe pursue or maybe ask, like, hey, man, can I come and be a kind of like a mentor or like a, you know, I don't know, big brother?
Man, I you know, if I got my testimony out there, that's my main goal. Because people go through all this stuff. They think, you know, wrestler or something, that they don't go through stuff. I mean, I'll give you two real quick stories about, you know, with me and God. There was you know, the night that the Saints won the Super Bowl? Remember that? You know, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I don't follow football.
Oh, okay. Well, anyways.
But I believe you.
But I get this phone call from my mom saying my dad had a heart attack and it led into a stroke or whichever order it was. And it kind of put him in a vegetated state. And, you know, mm-hmm. I talked to my dad and I remember saying, there is no God. Why would he do this to my dad, who my entire life talked about heaven and God and all that? So why would he do this to a man? Mm-hmm. And I would watch my dad. Then I begged for forgiveness. I said, God, forgive me. You know, because, you know, we all kind of question some things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the next week, I was supposed to wrestle, and my head wasn't in there. And my mom told me, if you let those people down, you're going to make your dad upset. Because my dad was still in the hospital, mm-hmm. in a vegetated state. And I went and wrestled. And my head wasn't there. And it was a packed house. I remember Jeff Dino and some of the first SoCal Pro, mm-hmm. they were running around looking for chairs because there were so many people. And I get out there and there's people standing along the walls. And I go, God, if you're here, you show me, please, that you're here. And nobody knew what was going on with my dad. And I walk out of the curtain and I walk out, you know, I see the people standing there. There was three empty seats. And it's the seat that my dad sat in. None of those people knew what was going on. My dad didn't have a sign the seat, but it was almost like, you know, to me that was a sign from God saying, you know, he's here, you know. And, you know, and I started to tear up because mm-hmm. even after that match, I called my son in the ring and I kind of gave everybody the heads up what was going on and how, you know, their cheers meant everything. And it was almost like a medication to me. Mm-hmm. And the first thing my son says is, he said, did you see nobody sitting in Grandpa's seat? And that was a sign that, to me, that was a sign that God was there. Mm-hmm. And I don't care what people did. And I wish I had this story, you know, where, you know, I went there for years, but I wish I had this story where my dad came. Like, but my dad passed away, but I'm at peace because, yeah. you know, he got to watch me wrestle. And yeah. I could see in his face every single time, he was so proud of me. And even though I said some stuff and, you know, and that he would, you know, laugh or, you know, I can't believe you said that type yeah. stuff. But I was at peace because who was I to, even though he was in a vegetated state, you know, in a coma, whatever, man, who was I? When he finally passed, I was kind of happy. And it sounds
relieved,
like
yeah.
I was happy for him because if anything, I should be jealous of him because he's going to a place that we should all strive to be mm-hmm. wanting to go. And then, you know, but like I said, seeing my dad's face was everything, you know, and, you know, and that was, you know, and, well, anyways, the other story is people, the other number two thing is people always ask me, what happened to your grandfather, your alcoholic grandfather? Well, you know, when I was scared when I was a kid, throughout the years, that scared would turn into anger. And it made me hate and want to, you know, because he would, you know, still go around yelling at people. And I just get so mad. And, you know, I'm bigger and stronger now.
Yeah.
So one day my grandmother watched my son, when Jacob, when he was a baby. And, you know, I get out of the car and I see my grandfather sitting by the stroller under Jacob, sleeping under a tree in the shade. And my grandmother sitting next to him. And to me, that was like, that's my, you know, my first reaction. I snapped. And I'm not going to lie. I went to kill him. And I went to rage. And I just heard a voice. It said, no. And that's the only thing I heard, the word no. And it wasn't my voice. And I stopped. And from there, I realized he's protecting my son. If people were around making noise, he was telling him to be quiet. And he protected, you know, he was protecting the most precious thing in my life. Mm-hmm. And to me, whoever, I believe it was God telling me no. All that hate, all that anger I had, all that fear I had when I was a little kid was gone right there.
Yeah.
And for a couple months, I watched him protect my son. If he cried, he ran and got my, he didn't pick my son up, but he ran and got my grandma and said, hey, Jacob's crying, you know, or if people made noises, hey, he's sleeping, be quiet, you know, tell him to shut up. Or
yeah, yeah.
And all that hate I had was gone. And, you know, it was one of those things. He died a few months later. I never got to tell him, but, you know, God gave me closure. Mm-hmm. And
that's good.
Yeah. And see, when you were talking about my testimony, the reason why I told those two stories, if I could get my testimony out there, because people think, oh, man, these wrestlers or even athletes or whatever, they live the perfect life. But no, we're like everybody else. We all go through financial problems. We all go through alcoholic problems. You know, we all, you know, we're out there. And I just, if I got my testimony and somebody could, wrestling gives me kind of a platform.
Mm-hmm.
Then, and if I could help somebody that's being bullied by a family member, or then all that stuff I went through was all worth it. And I don't sit here anymore going, oh, why does this stuff happen to me? Why, you know, why didn't it happen to somebody else? Because maybe I was meant to, I could handle it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's taken away from that, the victim mentality and being, you know, kind of, I don't know, without being cheesy about it, but, you know, the victor, you know what I'm saying, like claiming victory and not being a victim, you know. And, you know, it's one of those things. I believe God allows us to go through certain pain for a purpose, you know. That I believe, I personally believe that. You know, I lost my mother, I lost my brother, and I know that, you know, in talking about it, I know you get emotional, I get emotional too, and it's, you know, I'm able to use that, so... I take that pain, and sometimes when I know, hey, someone just lost a family member, I'm able to take the pain that I went through and be there for them, or say a few words or not say a few words, because, you know, I learned that sometimes saying nothing is the best thing to say, to not say, you know.
Right.
You know, but when like someone loses a family member, when someone loses their mom, you know, it's different. Like, you know, we talk about it. It's like, you know, you hear people dying all the time that are around you, and that's death in black and white. But when you lose a family member like that, that's death in full color. Like, you see it, you feel it. It's surreal. You know, when I lost my mom, none of my friends knew what that was like except for Sonny, the singer POD. And you know, I had just like an experience with him where, you know, he was there, he was at the hospital, and he didn't say a word. And, you know, I was just like, dude, what a jerk. He's not saying anything, you know. But it was, you know, he just came up, gave me a hug, and just held me for a minute. But it was one of those things because nobody else knew that pain. Like, they couldn't relate. They didn't know what to say. So Sonny, like, he just went through it not too long ago. So he was like, there's no words. There's nothing I could, all the sorries in the world don't do anything. So, you know, I know it's something like, you know, when I go lose my dad, like, you know, like, I know someone like Tim could relate, you know, losing his father, you know. And it's that pain is for a purpose, you know, and God allows it, and everything that you go through, most of the time it's not even for you, it's so you can help someone else, you know, go through stuff.
Well, I kind of have a similar story to that, and it's one of the, I had a couple of buddies of mine who this is right after my dad, he was still in the, you know, the coma, and and you know, when someone gives bad news, sometimes you they said, oh, our dad has cancer, and my first, you know, I'm never good with bad news, and you give them the generic, oh, I'm sorry to hear for that and hear that, and you know pray for him, and you kind of just walk away. Mm-hmm. And one day I when they were telling me their dad had cancer, I started to do that same thing. I walked away and I heard a voice say, go back. And I said, hey, you know, do me a favor. You know, make sure your dad dies, make sure you tell him you love him. Make sure you get him out, you know, give him a hug and stuff like, because I didn't get to do that stuff before my dad died. I wasn't expecting my dad to go down. I said, get out, hug him, tell him everything you got to get out and do it. And they did it. And, you know, they were kind of, you know, at peace with it, because maybe that was my way of God telling me, you know, learn from what happened to you, you know, tell them that what they need to do, because I didn't get to tell all my dad that stuff, you know, because I thought my dad was going to be there the next time. So, you know, like I said, every time we have a tragedy, or even when something good happens, there's something to be learned and something to, you know, to help somebody else.
Yeah.
You embrace it just like Batman.
Yeah.
Like Batman, yeah. Right? You embrace Batman. those fears, those everything that happens to you, you embrace it. And then, you know, he created a new, you know, self, like a more powerful self, a stronger self to battle that, and, you know, to help others too. Because that's probably the basic moral of Batman, right? He just took what happened to him, embraced it, used a stronger self image of himself, and then helped others, you know, with those battles or whatever, right? He was the hero of his city. So
exactly.
It's kind of the main thing, the main story there.
Yeah, there you go. You learn something new.
Yeah.
So what's the next thing you're going to do with your testimony? I know, you know, you've been talking about there's going to be a documentary. There was some stuff that was going on with you with some video stuff.
Jeff Dino, the owner of SoCal Pro Wrestling, and his
shout out to Jeff. He hooked us up with the and all the stuff with the toy drive with Rey Mysterio. Thanks, Jeff.
SoCal. And his fiance Kristen, a producer. She was I think she's got an Emmy and stuff like that. You know, a little shout out. But they want to do a Kickstarter where I just sit and tell my testimony, and and my goal is, I don't need money, but if I help somebody, you know, with all the stuff that happened to me, I have more stories than that, but if, you know, it's one of those, if I help somebody, all that stuff I did was all worth it, you know, they said they would shoot it, and they found people that would edit it, and I said, I'm doing it, you know, and, you know, and that's my one thing, you know, I might not be, you know, a main event of WrestleMania because I'm 45 years old. I'm realistic, but if I could at least, you know, get the story out, my testimony, and, you know, brag about what God's done and what he will do, you know, I'm happy with that, you know, it's one of those things.
You know. Did you ever do any of the WrestleManias?
No. I wrestled the day after WrestleMania, WrestleMania 9, but never know.
Wow.
I wish.
Yeah. No, that's just crazy, even just doing Monday Night Raw like that is... Right.
Well, it's funny, the Monday Night Raw is, I was there before the very first Raw. And I was just telling my son the story the other day. I was sitting in the locker room where they were naming, they're reading off a list of saying which guys needed to go to New York to be on the first Raw, the new team. Yeah. So that shows you how long ago I was there, you know, 25 years.
Yeah, 25 years. I know Conan, he was on the very first Raw. And I think they gave him the name Max Moon for that one.
Oh, yeah.
They gave him some big old elaborate costume.
I think it's shot fireworks or something.
Fireworks and some crazy stuff. And he was like, dude, this ain't me, you know. And there's a picture roaming around. I remember seeing it on, you know, online somewhere. But, you know, Vince McMahon was there backstage and kind of messing with the costume. And it was like a big old thing. And he was like, dude, this ain't me, you know. But so... You know, you did the wrestling thing, and now, you know, talking about documentaries or anything else. Is there anything else that you would like to get out of that, you know, from your wrestling career? Yeah.
Out of my wrestling career?
Is that it?
There's the Max. Oh, there's that picture I'm talking about with Vince McMahon right there.
Oh, yeah. I think there was almost a time. I think he was there they were testing it out when I was. I kind of remember them doing something like that.
Yeah, that doesn't look like him at all.
Like Conan?
Oh, he's got hair. He's got hair there.
That's crazy.
Oh, they changed. X-Men. That's actually Paul Diamond right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's not him. Well.
Yeah, they ended up giving it to someone else because I think he was just. He was so caught up in doing everything else. He was doing soap operas and movies and music, and he was doing all kinds of stuff. So he was like, I can't commit to every Monday coming here doing this. Like, right. I'm doing all kinds of other stuff. So you know, that was kind of his little stint, you know, with WWE. But like, what's next for you?
You know, I get asked to be a wrestler, and, you know, I believe, you know, I probably wrestle a little bit more, you know, probably not as often because I love being a dad. I hate being around, you know, but I still love wrestling. And
maybe refereeing or any of that
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, maybe. But like I always tell people, and I don't mean because I told about the, you know, I'll steal a line from a Rocky Balboa movie. But they said just proved, you know, with wrestling, you know, the last thing that ages on somebody is their heart. And I still have the heart, you know, through, you know, wrestling. And I'm not going to make a career out of it anymore. You know, I'm pretty much, you know, I mean, 45 is not old. I mean, but, you know, like, but when you're a dad and you're watching your son playing baseball and stuff, it's you know, I'd rather, you know, do that. Yeah. You know?
But there's that fine line where you're just like, all right, well, I can keep moving forward and take all my experience, take everything I've done and kind of pass it down to the next generation. Is that anywhere near it? Like you want to do a wrestling school or you want to do a workshop or you want to do any of that stuff?
You know, if I could sit and talk to the younger wrestlers, which people ask me to do sometimes, you know, because it's a little bit different, but I would just show, you know, there's going to be times that are hard. There's going to be times where you're frustrated. Just keep going forward, you know, and I know that's an old, you know, way to say it, but just keep going forward. You know, there's going to be times where you question, you know, things, but you know, if it's meant to be, it's going to happen in my eyes, you know.
Where did you see too? Are there signs? You're going after a dream, right? You have a dream. This is for anyone listening if they have a dream. And sometimes people's dreams are smaller than others. Some are bigger than others. But did you find points in your life where you were going and it was hard, but you kind of just knew you were going in the right direction? Like those little signs that were just like, all right, I think I'm heading in the right direction because things would go a certain way or...
Well, there would be times where, you know, like I said, when I first started, man, I know I'm saying a story there, but there was times I questioned God, am I doing the right thing? And he always seemed to answer my questions, you know, one of those, not with just wrestling Shawn Michaels, but just little things I'd ask, you know, am I doing the right thing? And then somebody would, you know, after a match, somebody would come in, oh, that's awesome. I've been watching your stuff for a long time. And that's one of your, I hope it's an answer to your question to where he's, if somebody's happy with my performance, then that makes me want to do better for the next person who is happy for, you know, to say the same thing. I hope I'm saying that right, but.
Yeah. I was just asking more of like, there's always those, you know, those little signs or something, you know, sometimes I'll tell people like, for instance, in my group yesterday, I went into this morning meeting and someone got a green cup and he happens to be a landscaper. Well, everyone had a white mug and I'm like, well, you're a landscaper, it's green. I'm like, that means you're going in the right direction in life. And he just laughed. And like, you know, I feel like those little, you know, that was a joke, but it was more of like, you know, sometimes I feel like people go down some hard roads or they really want to accomplish something and, you know, you're not going to make it to the top immediately overnight.
Right.
So, you know, there's always something that's either reassures you that you're going down the right path or in your case, you know, some, you know, God answers your prayers or a question you may have and you just know his presence is there. So, you know.
Yeah, that's how I look at it. I mean, like every time I thought, you know, especially when I first started, and you know, what's funny is, to this day, you know, I always wondered if anybody even cared that I still, you know, if I'm around or if even because I don't go, you know, when I go to shows, you know, a lot of younger, nobody knows who I am, and I think, did I do all this for, you know, what did I do this for, you know, and this was just this past year, and you know, Jeff Dino. The promoter, you know, SoCal Pro, he said, hey, the people, they put me in their Hall of Fame. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, that was one of the answers to my question, you know, I hope I say this right, because I was questioning, what did I do this for? I mean, did I do it for nothing? And then when I was holding that plaque, I couldn't help but, you know, because I meant something to somebody.
Yeah.
And that was my thing. But, you know, earlier in my career, like I said, I rode in the back of the truck just to get, 2 hours in the rain, whatever, just for a workout. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was going to make tons of money at first, and reality check, I didn't, but to just keep going forward, I think anything could be accomplished.
Yeah.
And did you ever go down the path of maybe, steroids or drugs or anything like that? No, I mean, because that's for real in wrestling.
It's big in the wrestling. I never really did because, I took my creatine and my, protein stuff, but in the back of my head, I was kind of afraid the heart thing, might die.
Yeah. Man, so, now you're freaking out.
I mean,
out.
I'm not laughing, but.
Well, even what is it, pre-workouts, those are pretty crazy nowadays, right? I mean, you got some that are like, some people say borderline crack.
Well, you guys saw me drink my first coffee today.
I know. Now you're freaking me out because we got you a coffee over here.
I know.
Shout out to Rob and the Gathering Grounds Cafe downstairs for always hooking up the coffee for sure.
You like the coffee.
Oh, yeah, it was good. Yeah. You guys so chance.
We
try
gave,
it.
We gave Jason his first coffee over here, iced coffee, and, it's a little strong, so, I didn't even think about the heart thing, and now it's going to be pumping out of his chest in a minute here. It's like a... cans of Red Bull.
I'll just go home and paint the house or something like that.
Paint the fence.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I think you got a story that everybody should hear. It's encouraging, standing up to bullies and just everything from losing your father and being in the ring and seeing the seat and then your surgery. The scar, it's all encouraging, man. It's inspiring. Is there anything that you want to share with anybody listening that you think, you've been wanting to say and haven't got off your chest?
I try to just say this, getting back to God, I just tell people to open your ears, open your eyes, but most importantly, open your heart for God. And nothing could go wrong with that. Only the best is going to happen. Give him a chance. And that's all he asks for is give him a chance. And it doesn't matter if it's a dream being a wrestler or you help you financially or whatever. Just give him a chance. And you can't go wrong with that. There's nothing you could,
And because some of the stuff is inspiring, maybe some people don't want to like ask questions online or something else. Mm-hmm. But is there a way to have anybody reach out to you? Some people stay private. I don't know. But is there, anywhere where someone can reach out? Maybe Facebook?
Email,
anything?
Facebook. I love hearing people's testimonies. Yeah. I love hearing you don't want to hear anybody, you want to hear their, but you want to hear that, that they believe something positive. They kept moving forward. Like I said earlier, moving forward and, I just love hearing stories like that. I mean, my wife and I, that's what we watch, we want to hear positive. Negative. Yeah. Most stories are negative, have a negative theme, but people that go forward and, want to live and
keep on swimming like Dory.
Yeah.
Right. I need email.
So what's your email address?
Radiant1.1.
Oh, that was one of the questions. I think someone had asked if you went by Radiant.
I'm the Radiant One.
Radiant1.1@hotmail.com Radiant One.
How do they find you on Facebook?
Just my name, Jason Redondo.
Jason Redondo.
Yeah.
Nice. And do you have a Twitter, Instagram, anything else?
I barely know how to use my phone. I have to have my son or my wife help me. What does this pop up mean? What does this mean? Is my phone going to get a virus on it? Or
Cool. Anything else you want to add?
No. I think I love your story, though. I love your story. It's inspiring. And, we have people here on Facebook who said the same thing. Like I said, Mark Young, he said he really appreciated it, that he's full of scars as well from motocross. And, he really appreciates the time that you gave here today. And, he's on the same path, and he told the universe already that he's going to be a professional DJ and producer, and he's almost there.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Inspiring just folks already.
Just believe, man. It'll happen, you know. Yeah. And, you know.
Tim, you got anything else you want to? Yeah, man. See, that's the inspiring part, man, is being able to do this and then hearing other people's just automatic responses on how you've inspired them already just doing it.
Yeah.
You know. Tim, I know Tim's always got a little something.
No, I want to say thank you for sharing your story.
Oh, yeah.
You.
No, thank you guys for having me. I mean, it's, you know, it's
an honor. I can relate to a lot of stuff you say.
Yeah. It's real, you know. It's real. Everyone has those.
Well, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Boxing or MMA?
I have to go with MMA.
Boom.
I love boxing.
It's because you wrestle.
Yeah.
You like all the fake stuff. That's why.
When I was younger, if you asked me that question, I loved like Thomas Hitman Hearns or the Marvin Hagler days or even Mike Tyson and you know all that stuff. But I don't know if I kind of got away from it. I don't see that anymore in the boxing world. And you know, I like guys when they cut promos on other people.
Yeah.
And I kind of been out of the boxing game for a while. So.
Well, here's another question right here. Any wrestler you wish you could have wrestled against?
I was there and I got to watch my buddy do it, but he wrestled Ric Flair.
Woo!
And it was a funny story about that. My buddy Larry wrestled Ric Flair and he was telling me, yeah, Ric Flair. He goes, he talked to me the entire match. He said, who trained you? And this is in the middle of a match. Who trained you? How long have you been wrestling? And he gave a... That's, you know how he does the chops? You know how he does the chops? My buddy came back with this bloody handprint of, you know, Ric Flair. And he looked at me, he goes, I'm never going to wash my chest again. Even though he had a bloody chest. Yeah. You know,
dude,
all
think about it, being smacked in the chest by Ric Flair, dude, that's just legendary. Yeah. You know? But is there a match that you watched while you were in WWE that just you were in awe where you're like, dude, this is... You know, just kind of a surreal moment.
Like I'm in the right place at the right time? When I was there?
Yeah,
while
you were there.
Oh, man. When was a good one when I was there?
Just being there and Shawn Michaels and Scott Hall, and you're just...
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Those ones, the Scott Hall and Mr. Perfect seeing Mr. Perfect wrestle and all those guys, man, it was just like...
Yeah.
For me, you know, it was all like... It was just, you know, it's just one of those things. I don't even know how to explain it. You know, you become a kid again.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, what's funny is, can I tell a quick story?
Sure,
I don't know why
the
story came in my head, but when I was a kid, I was a big, huge Roddy Piper fan. And we were talking about Roddy Piper earlier about, you know, Ronda Rousey and stuff. But the day after my first match, Roddy Piper was at my gym in Pacific Beach. And I was still
here in San Diego?
In San Diego.
Woo,
it's nice. Now, it's World Gym now, but it used to be called Gold's Gym. And I go, oh my God, that's Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
So I go up to him and I go, hey, Mr. Piper, I just had my first match, which actually was a Friday. Actually, it was 2 days. It was a Sunday. But he goes, oh, I just had my first match the other night. Cool. And I walk away and the next thing you know, he's calling me over. I'm thinking, he's talking to me? So he calls me over and, you know, he's talking about wrestling for about like half an hour and he congratulates me and all that, and he finishes it, but he puts his one hand on my shoulder. And like I said, I was a huge Roddy Piper. And the other finger on my chest, and he goes, congratulations, you're now one of the boys. And to this day, it means so much. Yeah. And every time I'd see him throughout the years, I'd say, who knows if he remembered me or not, but, you know, he'd always pretend like he did. He'd give me a hug and ask me how the kids were. And I always say, you know, my friend, because he treated me like a friend. And why I start telling that story, because even though, you know, I don't consider my name a big name at all, but I've been blessed to where I got to become a kid and, you know, meet people that
and do something you really loved.
Yeah. I mean, the Macho Man, I'm wearing a Macho Man shirt right now. I remember him sitting with me talking baseball and I'm going, oh my God, cause he played baseball, minor league baseball. And, I can't believe I'm sitting here with guys I grew up watching and, you know, just hanging, you know, talking like life, you know, and, you know, everything else.
And so. For those that don't know, wrestling speak, you can come in, Andy. Those that don't know wrestling speak, when someone says the boys is the wrestlers, and you know, the they don't. I guess they, you know, that's their own vocab. You can come in, Andy. We got Andy Gonzalez coming in from La Onda Arte. This is Jason.
How you doing?
And, we got visitors coming through.
You guys all the way down here.
We got visitors. We got coffee being brought up. All kinds of cool stuff. But boys, the boys is that's the guys in the locker room. That's the wrestlers. And to be brought in as one of the boys, that's the family backstage. You know, those are the guys that you can go to. That's the circle. And to be brought into the circle, that's a big deal. Yeah. You know, a lot of people don't know. Like, there's a lot of vocabulary, you know, that is only used in wrestle speak, I guess. You know, but we won't get into all that. But that's one of the terminologies of the boys.
It's cool. So it's like cool. A brotherhood then. Yeah. He pretty much said, welcome to the brotherhood.
And coming from him, you know, like I said, it was such an honor to wear. Yeah. I didn't even tell a lot of people. When I started sharing that, people, it's like, you know, it was
that's just, really cool.
People looked at me and they're like, that's a cool story.
Yeah.
So what's your prayer now for that whole part of your life? What do you want God to take out of that before we cut out here? What do you want God to take out of that to use now for the future, for your path now?
I would just like, if this is one of my platforms, or like the documentary, mm-hmm. when it gets started, just hope, you know, I could give hope to somebody, you know, mm-hmm. And I'm not like a rich guy at all. I mean, I worry about paying my mortgage every week like everybody else, mm-hmm. but at least, you know, I could show somebody that, you know, if you try anything, if you have a desire and you have God in your life, you could do anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, you know, I was fortunate. I'm blessed. Things I didn't think before that happened to me, I used to think, why? Now I think I'm glad that stuff happened to me. I'm glad because everything that I went through, you know, there's a reason. And if God could use me to help persuade somebody to go in the path of him, then that's my thing.
Then use me.
Use me. Yeah. They always tell you to be, ask God to use you, and it's kind of, I was always told, it's kind of a powerful thing. You got to be ready. Yeah. I want to be used to be, you know.
And also when you're going through stuff like that, I always say, because I had to learn it the hard way, you know, but it's not always about like, why God, why am I going through this, or why are you allowing this to happen in my life? Instead, it's more like, what do you want me to learn from this? All right, what do you want me to see from this? What am I going to learn from this? What can I take from this to give to others? You know, so you got to change those whys into whats.
I used to think why all the time. I thought why. And then now I think if something does bad happen, now that's when I sit down, you know, in my private time, and I think, okay, what did I learn from this? And that's how I find peace. I mean,
yeah, there you have it. Yeah. Andy, anything you want to ask Mr. Jason, former WWE wrestling superstar?
I was watching from home, and I had a lot of stuff to do, and I kept going, like, I was watching it, I'll be right back, and I'm like, no, this guy's good. And I kept watching it, and I couldn't get away, and then I wanted to, you know, I had to come down here, so I'm like, oh, I got to get down there, what do I do? Oh, I got a phone. So I dialed the phone, and I'm listening all the way down here. Great testimony, brother.
Oh, thank you.
It was awesome. Thank you. Very inspirational.
Thank you.
How many years did you wrestle for? Adesanya's asking.
I started training in 90, and I'm going to age myself, but I'm still kind of going. My last match was July 4th, so my first match 91. So if I do the math, 26 years.
Woo!
Well, now it's 98, so. Man. Well, when I wrestle Shawn Michaels, it's coming up the 25th anniversary.
Nice.
In April.
Not a lot of people can say that they wrestle Shawn Michaels like that, especially a lot of people from San Diego.
Well, like I was telling you, some of those guys that, some of the kids that, you know, my son and I watched the old matches, and those kids that are jumping around in the front row are probably in their 30s now.
Just to see you wrestle both of those guys, Blue Demon and Shawn Michaels, that's insane right there.
Yeah.
Well, cool, man. Thanks for coming out and sharing your testimony, and hopefully we can use you for some other stuff that we may be doing. I'm going down to TJ and visiting some of the shelters and orphanages and all that stuff. So, yeah, make sure you guys, keep checking back with Jason on Facebook and all that good stuff. And take a time out to send him a little inspiring message. And also, you know, keep an eye out for his documentary coming out, right? And Rob, thanks for the coffees. Shout out to the Gathering Grounds Cafe out here in Chula Vista, downtown Chula Vista. Abraham Rodriguez says,
Abraham,
when do you want your rematch?
Yeah, I wrestled Abraham.
Did you?
Yeah.
I refereed some stuff with Rey Mysterio Sr., and he was my, my, I don't know, he had us doing some crazy stuff where it was, he had a female wrestler and I had a female wrestler, and I was kind of like the good guy referee and he was the bad guy referee, and we had a hair versus hair match.
Oh yeah.
And my wrestler won, so I got a chance to cut off Abraham's hair.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
He needed it. So, a funny story with Abraham, it was him and I and, you know, Damien, 666?
Oh, yeah.
Him and I, the three of us were driving up to a match in West Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
And before the Chargers moved, I was the biggest Charger fan. We were all Charger fans, and we're driving up there, and Chargers won to go to the Super Bowl that one year, and 90, we were all excited.
94 or something like that.
We all had our Charger gear on, the three of us, and we walk in. We get to West Hollywood. We walk in. Raiders bar. And the whole place just kind of froze. And there's the three of us looking there, and then actually people came up and we were like congratulating us and stuff like that. But there was like, you know, like the place just freezes and we're standing there.
The record scratch.
Yeah. Wait, but see, do you want to be in a Raider bar wearing Charger gear, or do these Raider fans want to be messing with three wrestlers in that bar? Yeah, you know, right, that's the that,
minute,
that
would have been. But this is West Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
So what kind of bar was this?
Yeah,
so
they wanted the most like.
Well, I'll just say it was Raiders.
It's West Hollywood. I mean, they're like wrestlers.
Could have been the Gators.
Yeah. That's wrestlers.
That's the Rainbow District. Yeah, right. Wrestlers, because that's like the Hillcrest District of LA.
I didn't know that.
That's what I was saying. Maybe that was a gay bar you walked into. Maybe. And didn't even know. And they're like wrestlers. Let's wrestle these Chargers. Yeah. You never know.
We just lost our Raider fan base here.
Yeah, right. But so no more Charger fan. You didn't follow the Chargers after they left the
city. Unfortunately, I took a year off from football. And it's weird because my son and I collect sports memorabilia. And we would go to – when he was small, I took him to all the Chargers signings. Yeah. And anything Chargers related, we went to. And I never missed a play. This was the first year I kind
of – he's saying it was a 49er bar.
Yeah. You sure about that?
Sure. But some people – and you can look at it both ways. Some people, they're like, they left our city and whatever, you know. To me, I root for the hometown, so I'm all about whatever San Diego is. So if we don't have a team in San Diego, then cool. But some people are about the teams and not about the city. And so, you know, I respect those that still, like, cool, hey, you want to follow the Chargers no matter where they go, then do your thing. You know what I'm saying? I was just more on the hometown thing.
That's how I look at it, too. But I root for – what's weird is I root for Philip Rivers because my son and I were at a game, and Chargers, you know, just won. And I was like, Philip, can you take a picture with my son? He goes, I can't. And my son had an open book, you know, where you get autographs and stuff. He runs over and puts the game ball on my son's – folder and runs off.
Oh,
I go,
wow.
Oh, okay, you can't. Fine.
That'll work. That'll work.
So it's still good exchange. A Philip fan, and you know,
he's a good guy though. Yeah, yeah. I've heard that. Yeah.
Who's this? Crying Rivers?
Oh man.
Ouch. But no, man. Thanks for coming out. Thanks for doing that. And you know, hopefully that documentary gets done. Yeah. And you know, can't wait to see what it turns into. And dude, now you know where we're at. We're in Chula Vista. Next time you're down here, come down and hang out and
have
some coffee. Everything you showed me today was awesome. From
it's growing here.
From the sanctuary part, the coffee room, everything you just showed me. I mean, I was sitting there kind of like I was kind of quiet, but I was sitting there like everything like that. It's so positive and the potential and all that stuff is awesome. Yeah. You almost feel what's going to happen. You know.
Yeah, that's cool, man. That's. Everybody that kind of walks in, they're, oh, dude, it's a good vibe here. This is cool. Yeah. And most of, you know, when you drive by, you don't expect all this in this building. But we invite you guys to come through. I know Andy's bringing some people through to do a little tour. Come by. We're at 335 Church Avenue in Chula Vista, downtown Chula Vista. Come by, see us.
Check it out.
Mm-hmm. Check it out. Anything else you want to say before we... Boom, boom, done?
No, I just want to thank everybody
out of here.
For listening and... you know, and hopefully some, you know, my testimony at least got to somebody out there. And I want to thank these guys for having me. And, you know, like he said, if you get a chance to check this facility out, and it's awesome. It, and you could just feel like, for me, I could feel the Holy Spirit is here. And, you know, you know,
that's where it's at.
Yeah.
Right on. Good looking out. We out of here. Stay tuned. Stay connected. Miguel, you good?
Stay connected.
Tim, you good?
That's it.
Yep.
I'm good.
Follow us. Follow our page.
Give us a like, a share, all that good stuff. Out of here. Connected with Ruben Torres. Another show down. We will see you guys next week. Out of here.